Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
A business of your own. You need money to do so. Let's get out of debt first. Get rid of the student loan, mortgage, taxes, and all other contracts that bind you. Then go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Give me a call to Arca 904-303-9061. before you make any donations about anything, let's find out where you at and let's go to work eliminating this debt. Contact me, Tahaka53@hotmail.com, or call me, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Peace.
Welcome, Morris and Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and tonight we will be dealing with the Silver Rights Movement. What is that? The Worldwide Silver Rights Movement. We're going to find out all about that. Our special guest this evening will be a gentleman named Winston Michael Ray. Winston Michael Ray will be our guest here this evening, and we'll be dealing with some of the questions. Who is Winston Michael Ray? First of all, what is the Worldwide Silver Rights Movement in the first place? How will this new socioeconomic movement in the 21st century help those people in financial need? What is the science behind this movement? What is the history of the silver part? How do we get the silver? Now, these are just a few of the questions, and my guest will be punching in a minute. All he has to do is punch one on his phone, and he'll be ready to go, and we can get some answers to these things and find out what this stuff is all about, okay? I see right now we have a caller with his hand raised. Keep in mind, after the first hour of this broadcast, if you got any questions or comments, go ahead, punch one on your phone. I'll open up the lines, and you can ask your questions to my guest. Okay? All right, here we go. Area code 904. Tell us who you are. 904.
Hello?
904. Okay. I hear you. Hey. Hello? Are you with me, brother?
Yeah, hello.
Tell us your name. Tahaka? Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Winston.
Hmm? Hey, Winston. Okay. How you doing,
hey,
brother? Okay.
I'm doing great, sir. How you doing, Tahaka?
I'm doing just fine, my brother. Everybody want to know about this silver rights movement, man. Before we get into that, I was wondering if you could tell us, give us a little background information on you, tell us who you are, and a little brief background information on you before we get down in this thing.
Sure. First of all, I want to give my thanks to Almighty God for allowing me an opportunity to address this, what I consider very important issue to the nation at this time. My name is Winston Michael Ray. My mother gave me three names. I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, on February the 4th, 1958. And ever since that time, when I was a child, I like to go back as far as my childhood, I was interested in why events happen the way they happen. What makes things tick? It's like a mechanic. What makes a car run? I always wanted to know, I always felt there was a deep reason as to that not only happened in America, but worldwide, it happened for a reason. And as time passed on, I did extensive research as to why events, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people will agree, not merely my opinion, they happen the way they happen. And I'm ready to share that with the nation. And quite frankly, since it's part of a marketing campaign, market those answers to those questions that is possibly a still mystery to a lot of people, like example, why John F. Kennedy, President Kennedy, had to do exactly 1,036 days in office, and why what we're doing is happening during the last 1,036 days during the Obama administration. So that's basically the gist of it, and I'm a researcher, and over the years, this has been building up. It's a time frame period. It extends back, as you get later into the program, it extends back over 459 years, but recently, my involvement of it extends back to around 1989. We're ready to introduce a worldwide marketing movement to the nation. With all due respect to America's CIVIL, Civil Rights Era, it has ran its course. And we're talking about a marketing movement that will market undeniable, incontrovertible intelligence information that will and literally end homelessness and prevent future homelessness in this country. Did that give you an idea of what's going on, Tarka?
Well, yeah, that's a tall order. And when you say eliminate homelessness in America and poverty in America, we're talking about a horizontal issue. And that's a big, tall dog. But give me some insight on exactly what this worldwide silver rights movement is. Exactly.
Well, it's the worldwide civil rights movement is a movement designed to end a great wage and income disparity between the have and the have-nots, between the rich and the poor. And
okay.
I'm just going to speak freely and fluently on this one. With all due respect, again, to Reverend King Martin Luther King in the civil rights era, he was never, it was never meant for him to lead the poor people's campaign, as many was hoping he would did before his assassination on April 4, 68. It's for me to do, but it would be during a different time under different circumstances. Tarka, we're ready to market up to $300 billion, B as in baby, as in boy, $1 billion mm-hmm. worth of information on reading material, viewing material. I would like to, at this time, direct the entire nation, all who's listening to this broadcast and who will share this with their family, friends, and neighbors and so forth, we're directing all of our efforts to Seattle, Washington. I'm pretty much resolved on that's where the headquarters should be to coordinate this operation that will, in a nutshell, aim up to 50 million Americans, that's one-sixth of the U.S. population, that are struggling to pay their bills with $3,000. We're not going to give you the money. We want your bills up to $3,000. Then we also have several side plans to pay off college debt, and even one gigantic plan to pay off the nation's deficit. It's a large undertaking, but information I have, as I've given you the other day and recently, the questions you have before you, I've sent it to President Barack Obama is involved. We're going to end a campaign called Operation HOBO, which is an acronym for Homeless One or Homeless Ones, with an S, or Hurting One, mm-hmm. Hurting Ones, Barack Obama. So the president is definitely tied into it. I don't know if all the information I've sent him to the intelligence agencies and leaders of Congress and those folks ever got to him, and I hope it did. I've been sending him this for years. But the time has come to introduce this worldwide marketing movement on what I dub Worldwide Wednesday, October 1st, 2014, which is one of the former president's birthday, Jimmy Carter. In fact, this very night, which is September 8, 2014, I'm going to fax him some information, and the same information will go to President Obama and another president that connects with this, who is the same age as President Carter, who is 111 days difference in age, George Herbert Walker Bush. So I'm sending out the call for President George Herbert Walker Bush and President Carter and the former presidents and, of course, President Obama to make this happen for America. Let's do this for Martin. Let's let the world know whoever did that dastardly deed on April 4th didn't get away with it. It was simply divinely delayed. And we're talking, as I move about to Jacksonville, where I'm living right now, Jacksonville, Florida, I just see so much needless, senseless homelessness, men, women, okay. children. And this is a multiracial movement. We're ready to move forward. And I want to personally send a call out to Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State. Governor Inslee, we're coming in, NAABL, Worldwide Civil Rights Movement, and particularly to the mayor of Seattle, Ed Murray. So definitely I hope folks from Seattle is listening to this. I've been making inroads to this over the past month, talking to people and sending emails and factors. But we're definitely ready to usher in the worldwide civil rights movement. And it's all connected with a biblical passage. It's all coming out of one biblical passage. All of this hoopla.
Okay.
And it's
What is that? How does this coincide with the Bible?
Well, Exodus chapter 12, verse 40, 41, 42 43 and 44. It's right there. You don't see the messages. They have to be decoded. That's part of the marketing package. But I'm going to show the 430-year breakdown of that passage and prove that there are two Israels. There's the state of Israel, which are our brothers and sisters over in Jerusalem, over in the East, and they are the children of Israel, which are black Americans. And I really hope no one take this personally, but the undeniable, incontrovertible facts prove that black Americans fulfill that prophecy. And, of course, if they're the children of Israel, there's a land of affliction. All of this wasn't by man's design. This was everything went well. This was God's divine plan. So I give a thumbs up and a hand clap to it, applause to it. I'm prepared to prove that Martin Luther King Jr. was, I could say Moses. I could also say the spirit of Moses, because there's an analogy in the package showing that everything Moses would do, Reverend King did it to the first. Well, one of the things that struck me in his last speech when he said, "I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a nation, as a society, as a country, but we as a people will get to the promised land." So I can't really, I'm sure I could speak for other verses of that Bible as well, but I'm sure that one is basically primarily allegorical and symbolic.
I tell you what, give me the breakdown between Martin Luther King and Moses, if you would.
Okay, I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to give you an example. Let's say Moses would be born in Pharaoh's house. Well, Dr. King was born in comfortable trappings. You know, he's one of the top middle-class families in Atlanta during this time. He went to a prestigious school, Morehouse, Prosser Theological Seminary, Boston University. They also said that Moses would come to his people during the 400-year of their bondage. Well, if you look at from April 1st, 1555, when the prophecy started, to April 1st, 1955, April 1st, 55 to April 1st, 1955, that's 400 years, and Dr. King stepped out on the scene on December 5th of that year, 1955, in regards to the Montgomery bus boycott. By the way, I was born on Rosa Parks, the mother of the Civil Rights Movement, 45th birthday. And then you also see Moses killed an Egyptian, let's put it like this, messing with the slaves. And King, you say, well, wait a minute, I have you down there. Dr. King never killed anyone. Yes, he did. He killed a man named Jim Crow, segregation laws, with love and kindness. So it's all allegorical and symbolic. And people say, well, where does Jesus fit into this? Well, Jesus, who I call Yeshua, because there's evidence that there was never the letter J back then, he said, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So not only as
right.
for a people, a race of people, a class of people, but for a nation and a whole world. So we're definitely ready to I really want to prepare. I don't know how many people Taharka is listening to your broadcast. I hope it's 7 billion.
Oh,
you
don't have to worry about that. We going the masses is gonna hit us here. This is quite interesting. Go ahead.
See, a man predicted a book. By the way, with that passage, there's a book called 1984 by George Orwell. And Orwell speaks of a man named Winston going on worldwide televiewer in the 21st century. And he also said this man would be an enemy of the state. And when I look at revealing this worldwide as I'm doing right now, and we'll do much more as time go on, the state of Israel may have some problems with this. I like to say that Will Smith, the actor, played an offshoot version of this, an enemy of the state. Big Brother's watching you, the intelligence community, so forth. We're talking about a campaign that is going to literally end homelessness. Let's talk about that a minute. After all this said, after we market all, we're going to market the products. Our plan is to sell at least $100 of SILVER, not CIVIL, not that. That's gone. Civil rights products to 1 to 3 billion people yearly. That's $300 billion. If the money is used just for one purpose, which is ending homelessness and preventing it, keeping people in houses. If I have to pay the homeless bills the rest of their natural life, if they can't find a job and get up and running, so be it, because that, this is what the money is for. And I've contacted many civil rights leaders on this, particularly the King family, and I'm still confident that they will come aboard. But they must understand that four men was born to change the course of history in the United States, and their father, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was the third of the four. It's John Hawkins, Abe Lincoln, Martin Luther King, and Winston Michael Ray. They have tons of information on it. I've sent them information to the King Center in Atlanta and so forth. But America has hope, and we have a side plan to pay off a $1 trillion deficit. It's very simple. And it may be, it may not seem that simple, but I won't reveal that right now. I would like to meet with President Obama on that, and I hope that this gets to him as well. But the bottom line is, starting with this broadcast, which is September 8th, which is the anniversary date of the assassination of one of our governors, where I'm from, Huey P. Long, between today and October the 2nd, which is Mohandas K. Gandhi's would-be 45th birthday, this will be worldwide. And I can't emphasize enough that I want America to focus her direction on Seattle, Washington, where all of this will be coming out of. We're definitely going to set up the headquarters there. And we have the money. For every $3 million we bring in, we can help 1,000, to Harker, 1,036 people. That's pretty good deal.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Now, I got a question, though. What is your connection with James Earl Ray, Dr. King's alleged assassination, assassin on April 4th, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee? Give us a breakdown on that.
Okay.
So
I'm
your name is
an analogy package.
Okay.
Michael Ray. No relation. James Earl Ray. Here you go. Don't miss it now. America, don't miss it. James, here you go to analogy. James Earl Ray allegedly assassinated America's CIVIL, civil rights leader, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, in the 20th century with a silver bullet. And my job, fast forward to the 21st century, Winston Michael Ray, that's me, actually will assassinate America's civil rights era with a silver bulletin. In the 21st century. And that silver bulletin is the civil rights message. And I can literally say it's tons of it. It must have something to do with the last four letters, my name, Winston. If you look at the first few letters, my name is Win, W-I-N, Win, and the S-T-O-N, put the S in front of the T-O-N, Win with tons of intelligence information with Winston. I like to play with words. I like to do the Rubik's Cube thing, see what makes this work. I'm just a nosy little fella. But rest assured that the last stage of socioeconomic development for America is the separation of dependency era. And we have $300 billion. We don't need one dime, one wrinkle food stamp from the government to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Taharka, for those who are listening, if you want to see the voice on the other end of the phone, please go to youtube.com and type in Winston for President 2012. Winston like a cigarette. Winston tastes good. F-O-R, President 2012. I'm at the top, the black guy. And that's funny. A black man is saying he wants so desperately, so badly to end America's civil rights. And social integration era as we knew it, not totally, but as we knew it, is going to be raised up to a higher level. People need money, and that's the bottom line. And
okay.
We have it.
Now,
we have tons of it.
Okay, now, I'm trying to put together this thing, but what I need, because there's a lot of math here, and could you give us the date and time on the breakdown of these people that's involved? Now, we had John F. Kennedy, we had Martin Luther King, we had Robert Kennedy, we had James Earl Ray, we had Herbert Hoover, and all of that stuff. Could you give us the breakdown on how these characters, in a nutshell, using a system, simple people, places, times, and events? Could you give us this kind of breakdown on that?
Well, the breakdown, which is those names you just mentioned and many more, they were housed in a certain era. You see, I like to kind of compartmentalize things. The Kennedys, they played a key role in that era in promoting civil rights. All of those characters, I have to go back and individually show you their role, like J. Edgar Hoover. He had a key role in it, unwittingly to them. None of them knew that they were unwittingly connected. You know what? This is the bottom line. I'm a bottom line man a lot of times. All of these, I'm going to go back to John Hawkins up to me. Speaking of me, from Johnny Hawkins up to me, our role, mine's not unwitting because I'm the last one. I'm the last button on Gable's coat, if you will, the last one on the totem pole. Their unwitting roles was to unwittingly play a role in leading to the ultimate launching of the worldwide civil rights movement. There's even an analogy on the launching of the civil rights movement with the Cuban Missile Crisis. I arrived here in Memphis, 90 miles off the coast of Cuba, and I'm loading my message missiles for launch. That's going to hit as far from Miami, Florida, to Seattle, Washington. And, of course, if you read Cuban Missile message with Kennedy, and he was detailing how those deadly missiles placed there by the Russians would hit as far as Hudson Bay, Canada. So instead of when our bombs explode, if you will, our missiles hit its target and explode, it won't take life, it'll give life. The new message will explode in the minds of billions, giving life. And as my grandfather would put it, he would say it like this, this boy just opened up a big can of peas. So I'm an old Southern boy from New Orleans. That's just a euphemism. But we're talking about, I'm telling all of America, we don't have to live this way no more. We don't have to rob Peter to pay Paul. This money is earmarked exclusively, solely, only, totally for this purpose. And I want to throw out my number real quick. I want to cover as much as I can. It won't be up and running until September 22nd. But anyone who wishes to personally call me on it, it's area code 904-482-3480. Right now I'm making plans to get into Seattle. I expect to arrive there on September 13th, which is the Woodrow Wilson. This connects with his arrival to Seattle, Washington, on September 13th, 1919. And there's an analogy between Woodrow Wilson's open riot limousine in Seattle, Washington, on September 13, 1919, and John F. Kennedy's open riot in Dallas on November 22nd. My job is to gather information that is designed to launch a worldwide movement, like I said, launching missiles. But, of course, it's not physical. I don't know anything about it. I hated chemistry and physics in college. I just hated it. I loved history and civics. That was my forte. But we definitely, to all of America, America, CIVIL, Civil Rights Era is over. It'll be officially over on President Jimmy Carter's 90th birthday, and I'm sure whoever else was born on that day in 1924. By the way, that's the same year of my mother's birth. Bless her heart, Elois Louise Ray, February 20th, 1924. Somehow, God has arranged it that baby girl born on that day to Nathaniel and Evelina Ray in New Orleans, her baby boy, which is me, Eloise Louise Ray, two young baby boys that was born that year. So, see, God knew the whole plan all along. He's the only one who knows the future. Praise God. I'm glad he's the only one who knows it. But I see the struggle. And let's talk a little quick about the money. This is what is guaranteed. Are we still there?
Yeah. I'm waiting on the next one up there.
This is what's guaranteed. $3,000 for stressed out bills. We'll pay the bills. We want the bills. $200 in your debit card. A nice, used, workable car that needs fixing out. Mechanics can fix whatever, the transmission, engine, whatever, where you'll be safe on the road with you and your family. And the stressed out bills. But you, this is guaranteed for everyone. There's more as time goes on. We're going to empty car lots. We're going to buy up everything for those who don't have, to bring them up to parity with those who do have. But you're still waiting for that connection.
Let me ask you this. Where will the funds come from, and where will we exchange, or how is this thing going to work?
Where's the money coming from? Well, you have to see the information. I think we're already answering some of the controversial questions. We're putting together a first book called Almanac of Analogy, Reading, Viewing, Wearing Material. We're looking at a market of 1 to 3 billion people interested in buying it. Now, the whole civil rights package will be $100 for those who can afford it, like doctors, professional people, doctors, lawyers, ministers, and so forth. They're welcome to buy the whole package. But we want to start off with selling the first DVD, which we would sell between $10 and $15. And let's say a billion people buy it. That's $10 or $15 billion. And that's a lot of $3 million, if I may say, like, housed in that. And that's a lot of 1,036 people housed in that. So, again, for every $3 million we bring in from marketing, it's undeniable, incontrovertible intelligence information. We can help. A lot of people don't need up to the full 3,000. I've talked to a lot of people that say, man, if I had 1,500, I'd be the happiest man in the world. It's really under 3,000. So the marketing of this information, literally with all due humility, only I have, it was reserved for me to market. Orwell's Winston is the only one with the information, and that's me. And I can go on and on, but I want to see, I just basically want the nation to know that the old era is ending within the next 22 days. By October 1st, we're going into a new era, and it is sneaking up on the world. So we have the juice, if you will. We have the information. Between the first book, Almanac of Analogies, analogizing infamous and famous people and events, as we already discussed, James Earl Ray and myself, on civil rights and civil rights, fighting racial segregation and versus revenue segregation. I can go on. The list is endless.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. How can I get a hold to the DVD disc and the book that you have or that you're marketing? Where can I go to get that today?
Oh, well, we can do it
today. Because time is short.
Yeah, it is. We're going to start marketing once. First, my first idea is to rally up the nation on October 1st. And I'm sending out a call to President Jimmy Carter, former President Jimmy. Well, I'm still going to call him President Jimmy Carter, President George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush Jr., William Jefferson Clinton, and President Barack Hussein Obama to stand with us from Washington State on October 1st, President Carter's 90th birthday, and they'll let their presence and participation will let the nation know, and the world for that matter, know where they stand with moving the nation forward with this. So the first thing is, I need all the help I can get. Hopefully people will call this station and want to work with us. We need financial help to get it going, a seed capital account going to open up to get this going. We'll go over the particulars, but between today from this broadcast and October 1st, we need to rally up the nation. We heard of the recent crisis that's going on overseas with the movement of militant groups and all these other things that are happening in Russia. And I just see this is playing a positive role in that. Maybe this will thwart that, offset that. I don't know. But I definitely personally extending that invitation to our former presidents, all the presidents I just mentioned, Winston, Michael Ray, and we got 300, and it may, who knows, it may increase as much as, we don't know where this is going to go once these missiles are launched, if you will, these missiles. We may be looking at $500 billion annually to rebuild a nation's infrastructure. Not only homeless people and people on the verge of being homeless. I spoke before the recent Jacksonville City Council this past August 27th, and I have the tapes for that, and that's going to be marketed. I hear so many businesses come in basically begging the council to please approve this bill to don't cut this program. Right now we're in Jacksonville under Mayor Alvin Brown, and he got a wave of across-the-board cuts, programs that the homeless need and others need. And organizations need to keep their organizations running. 25,000. One of the programs they're cutting that is very necessary here in this area is a food program at a place called Clara White's. as an $82,000 a year program. Now they won't be serving breakfast to 200 and 300 people a day like they've been doing. And I'm sure this is happening all over the nation. The bottom line is silver is out, silver is in. And I call upon all of the civil rights leaders, any disagreement or differences we may have, we can iron that out. Every minister, Dr. King put it like this here, God is depending upon the preachers of the gospel to lead us out of this dark Egypt of slavery and segregation. And that can mean racial or revenue or any type. But I'm calling upon every American to stand with me, the presidents in particular, because they're the former leaders, the leaders of this country, and lead this nation, and other nations will follow suit. This is not just for the United States. Every country that allow us to set up civil rights operations in their country, they will benefit. They will. We can wipe out poverty worldwide with a campaign that can bring in about $2 trillion.
Well, let me ask you this. Where will the silver come into play in this thing?
So I'm using that word for several reasons. One, it sounds like civil. And then I think God put in my spirit, he said, you know, they betrayed my boy 2,000 years ago with 30 pieces of it, 30 pieces of silver. And I said, Lord, are you saying that this is a way of telling the world, hey, you didn't get away with doing that little deed, Judas Iscariot and his crowd. You betrayed him with 30 pieces of silver. And, you know, a lot of people like to quote, the poor you will always have with you. Isn't that strange? The poor you will always have with you is a biblical statement. He was betrayed with 30 pieces of silver. Now, in the 21st century, we're launching the Civil Rights Movement, and we also call it the Worldwide Poor People's Campaign. You see how it magically connects in jail. The most dangerous weapon we have to bring about change, and that's for those who see it as dangerous, it's really good, is the power of the message, the words. It's not missiles. It's the message missiles, if you will. And we intend our target.
Let me ask you this here. Now, exactly what is going to happen on October the 1st, 2014?
That's up to America. I'm so glad you asked that. I'm available. I'm here. Winston Michael Ray in Jacksonville. I circulate amongst the homeless. We will conclude Operation Hobo. President Obama is the only president with an acronym like that attached to his name, Homeless Ones or Hurting Ones of Barack Obama. What I would like to have here in Jacksonville alone is a citywide call-in. I would like every citizen in Jacksonville call Mayor Alvin Brown's office and say, you know, I heard the broadcast because I listened to it. I heard this guy Winston, and he said he's been here since July 1st trying to reach you to no avail, and he has money right now to ease the stress of so many people right here. And I, along with I'm sure all of Jacksonville and Duval County and the whole country for that matter, would like to know his view on supporting civil rights. And I think every citizen in every city should do the same thing. We're coming to your city, New York, New Jersey, my birth city of New Orleans, Louisiana, even Loose Balls, Mississippi. We're going everywhere. We're going to be civil. The civil rights era is over, CIVIL, period. And
Let me ask you this. Now, why did you choose Seattle, Washington for ground zero on this operation?
Well, it's the northern westmost city in the state, in the country, I should say. It's the northwesternmost state, I should say, in the country, Washington. You know, my name is housed in that word Washington, Winston. If you write the word Washington out, you'll see W-I-N-S-T-O-N. Now, some of them sound like real silly reasons. But I think the main reason is that we thought the Poor People's Campaign was going to be launched and led from Washington, D.C., in 1968, of course, as one of the ministers who was close to Dr. King said, that statement was made, see that King don't get into Washington. But God said, no, it won't be launched from Washington, D.C., but there's another Washington, and we're going to launch it from Washington State. Back to that analogy thing. So what we thought was this way is actually the opposite way. There's so many, I don't want to use the word eerie, I'm going to say ironic analogies. And I think they're noteworthy and they're marketable. And we just have to put it out there. Jiffy peanut butter, we never know how much Jiffy peanut butter they would sell until they put it out on the market, and now they sell tons of it. So we're going to market this undeniable, incontrovertible intelligence information. You know, that's strange. Two presidents that are same age that I'm calling upon to stand with us, George Herbert Walker Bush was former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and Jimmy Carter, he's a man who builds houses for the homeless with Habitat, and we're going to use undeniable, incontrovertible intelligence information that is marketable to generate billions from to end homelessness. You see the connection there?
Mm-hmm.
And I have an attachment.
Where will the funds come from to pay
from
up to
$50 million
Americans struggling to pay their taxes?
1 billion to 3 billion people interested in buying a book, a video, clothing,
okay.
A piece of clothing.
Where will they be available?
Everything starts on and after October 1st. First thing first,
okay.
We want to get the whole world to focus on Seattle, Washington on October 1st, which means we don't have much time to diddle around. We only got 3 weeks. And I want to direct all of the calls, anybody who wants to call this, to the mayor's office here in Jacksonville. I don't have his number before me, but I'm sure you can pull up Alvin Brown, mayor of Jacksonville, Florida. And what's going on down there? But two mayors are most foremost in my mind, utmost in my mind. Alvin Brown of Jacksonville, Florida, and Ed Murray of Seattle, Washington. So those are two mayors. I strongly suggest you call and ask what's going on with that, and because they both have been briefed on what's getting ready to happen. Other dates was chosen, but they were like. Well, those dates was we need some more refining. But, yeah, the money is definitely coming from $1 to $3 billion people that's going to buy the products. And they're doing it not just for the poor. They're doing it for themselves because the way I see it, if you give the poor, those who are desperate or struggling, a way out, then you lessen crime. People won't feel as desperate to do bad things. And so it's a public safety issue. Okay, well, sure. Buying civil rights products means getting them off the street, and I'm one of them as well. I'm going to say like I'm separate from that. It's just a win-win situation for the nation and for the world. And I can go on and on, but this is where we at in America. We did the 430 years, and we did the 29-year transition period, which ended April 1st of this year. And see, from April 1st to October 1st, you have to figure out how many days is that. And that's where we're at on October 1st. So I want to wish President Jimmy Carter a pre-happy birthday. And this idea was born when my grandmother, who reared me, she's my mother's mother, left this world on September 13, 1977. They go that September 13 again. She's the mother of the civil rights movement. And that's ironic because Rosa Parks was born on her 17th birthday. And even former Vice President Dan Quayle is involved with this. He was born February 4, 1947. I'm throwing out a lot of names here, but we're talking a lot of information on all those I've mentioned since I've been talking to you and tons more.
Now, what is this NAABL? What is that?
National Association for the Advancement of Business Leaders. I would like to call it the 21st Century SCLC, which was Southern Christian Leadership Conference, founded by Martin Luther King and others in my birth city of New Orleans, Louisiana, flagship corporation, if you will, of the movement. So we need that, the NAABL. And I think everybody has potential to be a business leader and business leaders, national associate. So with all due respect to NAACP, we're moving from NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, to National Association for the Advancement of Business Leaders. Okay.
Now, do you –
yeah. I mean, I'm kind of pressed for time for another meeting, and I want to answer more questions, but I think that my time is running out here on this end. But are there any more questions on you need to ask me?
I had an unexpected
meeting that just came up, and it's pretty urgent. And
okay, all right. Well, I tell you what, maybe we can reschedule you to come back and let us know when these packages and information will be available so that we can get that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I have anyone who have any questions, they can answer that to you.
Okay. If there's anybody got any questions out there, go ahead and raise your hand, and the brother will answer your question if you got any. And I really do appreciate you coming by and letting us know about this thing. So I don't go down there and call Alvin Brown myself. And but I'm looking forward to getting hold of the information in the book you got. Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time. Oh, also get with the two gentlemen that's running for governor of Florida, Charlie Crist and the present governor, incoming governor, Rick Scott. But my time is running out. I'm going to have to go. I hate to cut you short, but I thank you for this interview.
All right, my brother. I appreciate you being here. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you very much. God bless.
All right. God bless. Okay, Moore, we're back. This is very, very interesting. I'm going to look into that, and I'm really looking forward to getting a hold of the information that the brothers were discussing. And as soon as I do, I'll look over the information and let everybody know what we got and how y'all can get a hold of it. Okay? All right. We're going to be going into the next phase of the broadcast. Y'all hold your hat, and when we come back, then we will top off this show. We'll give out the rest of the information, okay? Y'all
America
hold your hat.
Has drifted toward two Americas, one black, one white, separate and unequal. And now, my brothers and sisters, not 21 million, but 26 million black people are living in the inner cities of America with no hope, filled with despair, factories closing down, moving out of the cities into the suburbs, then moving out of the suburbs and out of the country, leaving the unskilled laborers with no jobs, black men walking the streets with nothing to do. But when America's vital interests are threatened, such as when Saddam Hussein attacked Kuwait, now Saddam Hussein has become public enemy number one. But I ask you, Mr. Bush, when Saddam Hussein attacked Iran, after Ayatollah Khomeini came to power and removed your puppet government under the Shah, talk to me. You knew that Khomeini was trying to solidify his revolution. And while he was busy solidifying his revolution, both Russia and America joined forces to aid Saddam Hussein in his attack against Khomeini. And they were aided by Saudi money, by Kuwaiti money, by Arab Emirate money, to the tune of $80 billion. America knew that Saddam Hussein used poison gas against the Kurds in his own country of Iraq. And he used poison gas against the Iranians. But America did not say anything then. But when Saddam Hussein, a man that you all made, turned on you, why did he turn? What was his reason for turning? America has lived deliciously by undercutting the main products of third world countries on the global market. Sugar is the mainstay of the Caribbean. But when you undercut sugar on the world market, you depress the economies of third world countries. Cocoa and coffee and cotton and rubber and tin and bauxite. Whenever these are the number one bringers of foreign currency into a nation, and America gets together with Europe, her brothers and sisters, and depresses what third world nations depend on, then the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and I don't know what that means, but they say it means International Monetary Fund. But the IMF and the World Bank go into these countries regulating their affairs, devaluating their currencies, telling them what to do and what not to do in order to get a loan. And most third world nations are in great debt to the World Bank and to the IMF. How can Europe say that Africa and South America and the Caribbean owe Europe anything when you came into our land and you sucked the blood of our lands and our resources and our people, and now that you have to loan us back some of what you stole from us at a high interest rate, now you say we owe you the hell we do. You owe us everything. Excuse me. The Arab world was blessed by God with this book, Quran, and with the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. So the Arab world were blessed with wealth in the wisdom of God. And then oil was discovered in most of the Middle Eastern countries. Oil over whose control will give power to those who have control of the oil into the 21st century. And so the British controlled that area. But when independence came, the British moved out. But when the British moved out like a skunk that is run over on the highway, the skunk is dead, but the stench of the skunk remains. Everywhere they went, when they left, they cut up the land, redrew borders, knowing that there would be border disputes. And as long as we would be arguing over borders, we would keep focusing on one another rather than focusing on the skunk.
Take your time.
The Arab world under Prophet Muhammad, the Islamic world was one world. Prophet Muhammad never set up Egypt, Sudan, Morocco, Tunisia, Libya, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, Iran, Iraq. No. When Islam comes, barriers both of color, of race, and nationality sink into insignificance. So under Islam, there was one world. It was called the Nation of Islam. Egypt, all of these countries bowed to the rule of the caliphate at Mecca. One power over nearly a billion human beings. America and Europe could not keep such power intact if they were to become the world power. So they had to destroy the Islamic world. This is why the Muslims seem like they're such fanatics and anti-Americans and anti-Western people, because the Western world has conspired to destroy the power of Islam and the power of the Muslim world. You can take it or let it alone. I want you to hear me. So when the British left, they cut up the Arab world into 22 countries. And at that time, what is called Kuwait was an actual part of Syria. I mean a part of Iraq. And there's been a territorial dispute. But they've gotten along well. But what happened? America wants oil, needs oil. But if America can buy oil at prices of $15 and $16 a barrel, then America's economy, which is not in good shape, can continue to look fairly well. Mr. Saddam Hussein knows that oil is the principal means of foreign currency in his country. Just raising the price of oil $1 a barrel would give billions to his economy. So Saddam Hussein accused Kuwait of putting more oil on the market to keep the price down so America and Europe's economies could flourish while the economies of the third world died. So Saddam Hussein met in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia to discuss the matter. But the Kuwaitis would not yield, so Saddam Hussein sent his troops. He got a million-man army. He's got tanks. He rolled over Kuwait and took the oil field and took billions of dollars in gold bullion, raped the country, and the price of oil started going up, up, up. And the stock market started going down, down, down. And now the vital interests of America is threatened, pray tell us. So guess what? Kinder and gentler, Mr. Bush. Thousand points of light, Mr. Bush. Said immediately, send the troops. Our vital interests are at stake. Our way of life is at stake. Barbara Jordan, our sister here in Texas, wanted to know what was this way of life that was at risk now. It certainly is not our way of life. We've been at risk. Not our way of life, our very life is threatened. But Bush don't answer. Reagan don't answer. The banks won't answer. The schools won't answer. The police won't answer. Nobody hears our cry. But when America's vital interests are at stake, send the army. Who's in the army? Who's in the Marines? Who's in the Navy? Who's in the Air Force? Who is it that can be all that they can never be in the society, but they can be it in the army? Word has come to me. I don't know how reliable the source is, that 65% of those that are in the desert of Saudi Arabia are black. Black men, black women, ready to die to protect the vital interests of America. But America has not made saving black people a vital interest to them. I have a problem with that. That when America gets in trouble, it's the blacks, the Chicanos, the Native American, the poor whites that have to bail out the rich. But when the savings and loan industry got in trouble, he is willing now to tax the American people to the tune of $500 billion to bail out the savings and loans. But black people dying in the inner cities, dying from infant mortality, dying from AIDS, 57.6% of all child-bearing women from 15 to 44 years of age, black women, 57.6% of all of those women that have AIDS, they're black women. 54.5% of all of the children that have AIDS under 15 years of age are black. And 40.2% of all teenagers from 15 to 19 years old suffering from AIDS. America the beautiful, the land of the free, the home of the brave, but inside America is a rot going on. America sanctioned the Tuskegee experiment, where hundreds of black men were infected with the most virulent form of syphilis and allowed to lay down with their women for years and years and years, and they were never to be treated for syphilis. This is actual facts. Every scholar and scientist that I have talked to about AIDS say that it is not a natural virus, but it is a manufactured virus. Where was it manufactured? By whom was it manufactured? And more importantly, for whom? Now we have to bear the burden of America's war.
Wake us up, Brother Minister.
We have to bear the burden of building a nation. Our fathers sweat and blood for 310 years built the agricultural economy of the South. And the agricultural economy of the South and the wealth of the South fuel the industrial revolution of the North.
Come on.
We black people, we died in your American Revolution for your freedom, not our own. And when you got independent and said, we the people, you never considered us as people. Because George Washington, Ben Franklin, and the framers of the Constitution had us in slavery, and that same document referred to us as three-fifths of a human being. But when you got in trouble in the War of 1812, it was we who helped you out. And when the slaves of the South started escaping North, and the North went to war with the South to preserve the Union, the black soldiers fought on the side of Grant, and black soldiers fought on the side of Lee. Over 400,000 of us died to preserve a Union that didn't care about us. We had to fight in separate regiments because they didn't want us mixed with them. We were not good enough to praise Jesus' name in the same church with them. We were not good enough to read the sacred word of God found in the scriptures. They locked the Bible from us. We were not permitted to even learn to read, and anyone teaching us how to read was flogged and beaten. They enforced a code, a slave code, a dehumanizing code. They never wanted us to marry a black woman, just to have her in the field or in the barn to make another baby for slave purposes. So the black man was like a stud horse. He made a baby, but he didn't take care of it. So now white folks say we're sick and tired of taking care of the babies fathered by black men. But you're only reaping what your fathers have sown. They have the audacity to call me a separatist, as though we came over here in an integrated setting. but I am the separatist. They didn't even want us to be buried in the same cemetery with them. Couldn't go to toilet with them. But I'm the separatist. I'm the bigot. I'm the racist. I'm the anti-Semite. You got a hell of a nerve. You got a nerve putting your sins on me, who is the victim of your sin. I'm a hater, but where did I learn it? I wouldn't waste a moment of my time trying to teach black people how to hate white people. You do a very good job of that yourself. And now, black people, beloved brothers and sisters, we helped America to become great and powerful. We fought for her in World War I and World War II. We fought in the Korean conflict and the war in Vietnam. And black men and women stand ready to bleed their life blood out for America today. But what is America planning for black people?
Good question.
I want to talk about those principalities and those powers and the rulers of the darkness of this world and the spiritual wickedness that is moving in high places. Our worst enemy is not white people. Our worst enemy is our ignorance. Our ignorance is the field in which our open enemies work. They manipulate our ignorance and our self-hatred. And our fratricide has become one more manifestation of a pattern of genocide. Now, many of you would not think that the government of the United States would plan the death of a people. And many of you do-gooders, you who are appalled at my audacity to make such a pronouncement. Farrakhan, they say, is a man filled with paranoia. After living under white rule for 400 years, don't tell me we're paranoid when we talk about a plan at high levels of government to destroy our people. Let us see if the facts will bear it out. You preachers and you imams and sheikhs, you readers of Bible, what do you have a Bible for? If you're going to read it and don't understand what you're reading, what good is it to have a Holy Quran and then cast the book behind your back as though its truths are irrelevant when it exposes the wickedness of government? You all like to preach religion. When you expose the sins of the members of your congregation, we are really powerful then. when you get an adulterer in the congregation, a drunkard in the congregation, a homosexual in the congregation. Oh boy, we take off then as though we are some sinless people who preach. There's not one preacher in America, including the Pope of Rome, that is not a sinner. There is not a human being on this earth that is not a sinner. According to this book, the Quran, and I'll quote the Bible when I finish. Just listen to me. The Quran says, if Allah punish man for his sins, not one soul would be left alive on the earth. That includes us all. In the Bible, it said all of our righteousness are as filthy rags. And Paul said, Jews and Gentiles, they are all under sin. There is none good. No, not one. Is that your Bible? So we have no right to preach to the people as though we are blameless. We ought to preach to the people with the compassion and understanding that we are all hopefully striving to be better than what we are, and then encourage the sinner like yourself to improve yourself. Come on. I know this don't set right, but that's why they gave Jimmy Swaggart hell. And that's why they gave Jim Baker hell. Because we preach religion as though we are free of the sin that we're preaching about to others. But some of the most wicked people on earth are some of us who preach religion. Well, I'm just trying to level it off. So ain't nobody up, nobody down, no big eyes, no little U's. We all stand in need of the mercy of God. But look how difficult it is to take on principalities and powers. See, it takes courage, Reverend. The prophets of God reprimanded, rebuked, admonished, corrected, and reproved the kings. But those of us who walk in the path of prophets are very cowardly when it comes to rebuking the politicians who are leading the world and the people astray. You can't say you're with God and God is with you, and you're too cowardly to speak God's word and suffer the consequences. There are consequences you got to pay when you tell the truth. Not truth or consequences, truth and consequences. I know I got to pay a price to tell the truth. But what is my life? It is not more important than truth. And it's not more important than your lives. So if I spend my life for the sake of truth, I am no better than those worthies that went before me. In fact, I'm trying to follow in their noble footsteps. And now I'd like to carry this subject, hopefully, to its zenith.
Take your time.
America has done us wrong. America has done the Chicano people wrong. America has done and is doing the Native American people wrong. America has done the poor wrong. And the value of a nation and the greatness of a nation is not your roads, your communication, your transportation, your technology. The value of a nation and its greatness is how it treats the weaker, the poorer, the less fortunate in that society. And so Jesus came into the world to serve the poor, the weak. And if this is to be a Christian country, it's not one. This is not a Christian country. I'm going to say that again. This is not a Christian country. This is a country that when Jesus Christ returns, the country will say, Lord, Lord, and he will say, depart from me, ye workers of iniquity, I know ye not. This is not a Christian country. This is hypocrisy masquerading in the name, in the holy and righteous name of Jesus Christ. Using his holy and righteous name as a shield for your dirty practices. Jesus never told you to make us slaves. Jesus never told you to kill off the Native Americans. You say, but they are heathens. They are heathens. They don't have our Bible. You're a fool. This is a people that existed on this earth long before there was a Jesus and an Abraham. I want you to listen to me good. They don't need the Bible. And now, wait a minute, Farrakhan. I think you're going a little too far. No, I haven't gone far enough. Hell, you need the Bible. Brother, sister, the Bible is a book that records universal law and principles carried in historical anecdotes, stories, parables, parallels. These principles have been before the Bible. And if you burn all Bibles and Qurans, these principles will exist. These principles are not written on paper. These principles are written in the universal order, and these principles are ingrained in the nature in which we all are created. The Bible and the Quran is a map, a road map to those who have lost the path to God. One.
Okay, everybody, we're back. That was the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan laying it down as usual. I want to make some announcements. We will be dealing with the sisters this week. We have some information we want to put out in regards to them. And also, don't forget to catch me each Friday evening at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or 11 a.m. Pacific Time at High Frequency Radio. Make sure you catch us. We're going to be dealing with exercising your freedom rights to travel this Friday. So don't miss that. We're going to get down into all of the information on how to do that. What's your strategy? How are you going to go about doing that and making that a reality for yourself? So make sure that you catch us. Now, at this point, we are an hour and 34 minutes left into the broadcast. If anybody got any questions, now's the time to raise your hand. I'll open up the line so you can get in and let me know what's on your mind. I wanted to commend all the brothers and sisters today that have participated in the Blackout Monday. That was nobody spending any money with anybody that don't look like us for a 24-hour period. That period is not over. We're still in this thing. And tomorrow, if we really think about it, if we do it forever, it's a wonderful thing. But we want to get as many people participating in that today, which is September the 8th, Blackout Day. We did a broadcast on that, and we're coming back again involving that information. And Sister Sharon Hunter Bay is the one that brought that to my attention, and it was a wonderful project, and I commend everybody that participated in the Blackout today, okay? And that we will come back at a later date and do this thing again, because if we are refusing to give our currency to other people that don't look like us, we're well on our way to functioning in a whole different light. I mean, if you look at it, you ask yourself a question, you know, who is it that's buying the hair and nails, and who are you buying it from? What if we bought it and from ourselves? What's wrong with us being in business and with a market like that, which is a tremendous market, it's worth millions? We do that for ourselves, okay? That's the way we need to be thinking about this thing. So y'all hold on for just 1 second and be right back.
Tune in to Morris Talk Live 100 with your host, Tahaka Bay, every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Exclusively right here on High Frequency Radio Network.
We are where we are in this life because of the actions we have or have not taken. You don't wait until war break out to start making ammunition. You make your ammunition in peacetime. Look up the word mortgage in Black's Law Dictionary. You will find the word lien. Now ask yourself a question. Do you need a lien? How can you say I'm being blessed? I just got a lien. Come on, man. Let's use a little common sense here, and let's start freeing up some capital for investment. Let's examine these things. Let's get all the information on it. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amana Elbe, 904-303-9061. Before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, let's go to work on this thing. Let's make the ammunition now.
Okay, we're back. Now, I want to say something about a brother that I had on a while back, Brother MDL Jones. I'd like to commend the brother. And this month, I'm trying to concentrate on getting more people of African descent to start opening their own businesses. That should be our primary focus going into 2015. In between, the way I see it now, in between now and 2015, if we can all have something that we can call our own, I mean, some kind of business of our own. I mean, we got to stop, get off of this merry-go-round, going to work, making other people rich, and start stemming the tide. Let's start doing something for ourselves. Now, at newdebtelimination.com, if you look up top, you'll see Own Your Own Business. Go over there. We have a little MCA package you can get and have your own business. You can network that thing $80 hits your account per week, and it's available for you every Friday. The only thing you have to do is share the opportunity. That's your baby. That's your business. For those of you who would like to do that, contact me in regards to owning your own business. And if you got any questions about that thing over there, it's a wonderful thing to have. I have it myself, and it's always available to me. And my relatives can use it as well. Your family members. You might have somebody in your family that on medication. Somebody need to go to the doctor, the hospital, or something. You know, I don't know where everybody is at on this stuff, but isn't it nice to have something that you can use to get a big discount on stuff? And it comes in handy when your car breaks down and stuff, and you're traveling and you got that a little business opportunity that you can work and get things done for yourself, okay? It's wonderful. But anyway, go to newdebtelimination.com and let's start concentrating on owning our own company. Right up top, all you got to do is click on the link to say own your own business. Check the whole page out. If you got any questions, you can call me, Tahaka Amana Elbe, 904-303-9061. Before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay. And we got to stop with this thing about we broke, but we happy. There's no way for us humanly possible for us to be happy being broken, miserable, and having come to the conclusion that it's time for us to do something. What we have to do is get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and then turn around and do something about it.
As Joseph Murphy said, there is no virtue in poverty. You know, no man ought to be satisfied with a little if he's capable of using and enjoying more. You know, the man who has nothing to give cannot rightfully feel his place in society. You know, isn't it amazing that people get rich in every profession and business while others in the same business or profession remain in poverty? It's like I heard a gentleman say a few years back, if you are not succeeding, it is because you are doing the wrong thing or you are doing the right thing the wrong way. You have to ask yourself, do others have a monopoly on opportunity? Everything good is naturally good for us. Having resources allows us to better express ourselves in service of others. Resources allow us to show others that a better life is available for them, as well as us. Resources allows us to do things for our families. We have to get rid of that mindset that we have a limited supply. Stephen Covey, in one of his books, I believe it's Principle Tenet Leadership, talks about having an abundance mentality instead of a scarcity mentality. You know, a lot of folks live life believing that there's a limited amount of resources to go around for everybody. They believe that life is a lie and there are a limited amount of pieces of a pie to go around. Instead of looking at life as a kitchen with all of the ingredients to make as many pies as we want. You know, we're going to start to recognize more when we give more. I'm not talking about giving people money. I'm talking about giving people greater value. We're going to have to fix the image in our mind, and it has to be clear and definite as to what we want. If the picture is not in focus, it's going to be hard to identify. You know, kind of just like when we take pictures with our phones or our cameras, if people still use those, I mean, I still have cameras. But we have to get the picture in focus to make sure we get a clear picture. You know, what do you want? Do you want it bad enough? What would your life be like if you owed no money to bills with the exception of what you had to pay monthly? You know, like water, electricity, gas, things like that. What would life be like if you didn't have a mortgage? What would life be like without a car payment? If you can't see that type of picture for your life, what would it be like if just your credit cards were paid off? Now, we can't continue to talk about what we want without working toward what we want. If we want financial stability, we can't keep our focus on poverty or being poor. Wherever the mind focuses is what we usually end up with. One of the things I hated hearing years ago was that my past thoughts had brought me to the place that I was currently living. When you have been taught your entire life that rich people are evil and have too many problems, even if you know better, your mind does everything in its power to make sure you never have riches. Your mind and your entire being has internalized that thought process. You go through your life, and every time you see or meet someone who is well off, you have a thought in the back of your mind that they did something wrong to get there. You know, I remember when I was in college, I worked at a retail store, and I was getting ready to take something out to a vehicle for her, and she was at the counter paying for her stuff. And she opened her checkbook to write her check. And I just happened to look down at the checkbook and saw that her balance in that checkbook was right over $10,000. Guess what my thoughts were? Based on my programming and my upbringing and my current hourly wage of $5.25 an hour, I had a hard time believing that someone had that type of money in the bank. What has your upbringing taught you? I grew up thinking that the only way I would be able to make it was through the sport of football. And that's normally our conditioning in the black community, especially, that we're going to make it in athletics. You know, where did I get that thought process? You know, probably the same place many of you that are listening to this got it. Just like we can't be healthy by thinking thoughts of disease, we can't get rich by thinking thoughts of poverty. We shouldn't talk about, think about, or concern ourselves with poverty. It gets difficult, though, when you have been raised to think poverty and when you have experienced poverty. Let the experts spend their time studying poverty. The experts actually get paid very well to tell you how bad people are doing. Poverty is negative. Negative saps our energies. You know the best way to help poor people? The first way you help them is not you not being one. The second way is to get rich enough so you can lend a hand to those in need. Remember, when you get instructions on a plane, the flight attendant says to put your oxygen mask on first if you are traveling with someone who needs assistance, so you don't compromise your life or the one traveling with you who may need assistance. Our finances are the same way. We need to get ours in order before we can help others. It is great to want to eradicate world hunger, but since you owe Visa $1,000, let's start that first. If you're going to become rich, you can't hold images of things that that poor represents. Don't read the things that poor people read. Don't go to places the poor people go. I remember reading about a gentleman who had no money, and he found out where the better off people went for dinner. He couldn't afford dinner, but he got dressed up, and he went and ordered a drink because it was all he could afford, just so he could be an earshot of their conversations. And guess what? By listening to their conversations, his thought process towards money changed. You know, I know I'm going to probably catch some flack about this particular talk because talking money in our society is all of a sudden considered taboo. But tell me, if money is not important, why do you get up at least 5 days a week to go and earn that thing called money? We were taught our entire lives to not talk to others about money, religion, and politics. Well, guess what things are doing the most damage to us in today's society? The lack of money, controversy between the religions, and the misunderstanding of politics. You know, poor people don't need charity. They need inspiration. They need a dream. They need a desire to do better. If we have had financial troubles in our past, we shouldn't focus any energy in that direction. You know, the rearview mirror on your car is smaller than the windshield for a reason. If our parents and grandparents were poor, don't talk about it. By doing those things and you haven't earned riches, is to associate yourself with poverty and their poverty. How can the mind function toward riches if it keeps the focus on poor and poverty? We're going to have to believe that wealth is available for each one of us. You know, I heard Miles Monroe say that, contrary to what we believe, no money has ever left the earth. That's something to chew on for a minute. You know, I also read in a book somewhere that if they were to take all of the wealth worldwide and equally divide it among everyone in the world, the ones who had the wealth before the distribution would get it all back. Now, that's not going to be because they're going to steal it, but because they think differently in terms of money. I heard a businessman say years ago, if you took all of his money from him, and this guy's a multimillionaire, in a couple of years he will be a multimillionaire again because he learns and understands the principles on how to earn money through business ownership. So, some preachers will get upset about me talking about money. So, some are only preaching for money themselves. And the rest of them need the money to keep the doors of the church open. You know, we shouldn't sit around waiting on a change of environment before we make changes. We should put forth some action and create our own change. When you don't put your oar in the water, it becomes harder for the rest of society to row the boat. Don't live your life continuing to be a leech. Don't suck off of everybody else's productivity. Eventually, the rest of society will run out of blood for you to keep sucking on. Have you ever tried to push a wet piece of spaghetti? When we can do things that we want to do, life offers us satisfaction. When we're not able to do the things that we want to do, life gets boring. And nothing else satisfies until we can truly feel that void of happiness. Am I saying money is happiness? No, not at all. But have you ever looked at a kid's face on Christmas? Now, I'm not saying money makes you happy, but poverty definitely doesn't make you happy. You know, I ain't never heard nobody sit around and, you know, husband tell his wife or man tell his girlfriend or his kids, we broke, but we happy. You know, the only time I've ever seen broke people happy is when they're drinking alcohol because the alcohol momentarily takes away the pain of them not accomplishing. It's a temporary high. Not having money is a surefire way to be miserable. You know, you'll get a raise on your job for 6% and you think you did something great. Well, you know, it's better than not getting a raise. But what you didn't realize was that mayonnaise went up 22%. You know, I remember a few years back, a guy complaining about the brown bag special at Sonic going from $5.99 to $7.99. You know, let's face it, everything increases over time. The best thing we can do instead of complaining is to out-earn higher prices. You know, I mean, even a dollar menu at some places nowadays includes items that are $1.39. You know, they used to be a dollar. You know, the question is, do you have the desire or motivation to do better than you're currently doing? That's what it's all going to boil down to. You know, if you don't have the desire or motivation, nothing, and I mean nothing, I say will even matter because you want to be stuck in your level of comfortable misery. All of us want more money than we currently have. If you're an employee, you want raises and promotions. If you're a business owner, you want more customer sales. Whatever each one of us has, we may be happy with it because that is all we have at the moment. However, each one of us has a desire to do just a little better. We don't have to walk around bragging. Everybody hates a bragger. We should walk around with a state of humility. What would life be like if you taught your kids about the proper accumulation of money? You know, you're going to have to get some of Robert Kiyosaki's books. You're going to have to start getting some of Dave Ramsey's books. You're going to have to start getting John Cena's books. You're going to have to start learning about money. What would your life look like right now if your parents had taught you about money? We all were taught about success in life, except when it came to money. Do you think that's by accident or on purpose? What if we taught our kids, along with doing well in academics and sports, and notice I said academics first, we taught them how to do well in economics and finances? What if we were taught that when we were growing up? What would, or what will your family's legacy look like if you could master this thing called money? What if, in a way of reinforcing it, our preachers could reinforce it from the pulpit, because it is in their book too? I'm not talking about the selfish ones who are in it for the money and the money only. I'm talking about those who want to impact and empower families and communities. You know, I remember communicating with a guy who told me it seemed like I was only in the motivational speaking business for money, and I needed to change my thought process. What he didn't know was that at the time I had been speaking, I had been doing it free for a number of years. You know, this same guy who told me I was only in it for money was telling organizations that said they didn't have the money to pay him to come in, he was actually telling these organizations how to call other people and other organizations to partner up with them so they could afford his fee if they wanted him to come and speak. You know, I talked with another gentleman whom I consider a mentor, and I told him about this communication, and his response was, everybody is in whatever profession they're doing for the money. He said, yeah, we might be passionate about what we're doing, but if we're not getting paid, we're not doing it too long. And this guy just happens to be a motivational speaker too. You know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, Joseph Murphy said, there is no virtue in poverty. You know, poverty is a disease like any other mental disease. We were born to succeed. We were born to win. We were born to conquer difficulty in our lives. You know, I'm not saying to love money. I'm saying that we should appreciate the value and what it allows us to do. But money is freedom. We drive around with spare tires in our cars. When are we going to put some spare income in our bank account? Just as we can't neglect some form of spiritual food and physical food, we can't neglect our economic food. Some folks do not like the process of daily affirmation. I do. Start saying on a daily basis that you are prospering every day and that you are moving forward financially. The things that keep us and actually have kept us away from money circulating in our lives are our mindsets and our attitudes toward money. If you want riches to enter your life, you can't curse the man or the woman who already has them. When we feel or operate from a position of lack, we increase the lack in our lives. What if we said, I wish for every man on earth what I wish for myself? When we realize a dream, the satisfaction is only short-lived until we go after a new one. When I speak in the school systems, I always tell the students, if they want to earn $5 million a year, they should write it down and figure out the best way to do it that is legal and honest. Can you exchange the poverty mindset that you have, that was instilled in you from birth and affirmed through childhood all the way through your teens, over and over and over again? Well, of course you can. I heard a guy say years ago that our income will never outgrow our self-image. That can be a hard pill to swallow. Nothing on this earth is actually hidden from us. We just need to figure out how to get it to flow our way. You know, especially with the internet. I mean, we just want to be ignorant if we don't go and check out all of the resources that are available to us now. You know, my mentor says that one of the battles we are fighting is getting money to flow our way, because there is no shortage. What if we woke up each day and we said to ourselves, I accept thoughts, only thoughts, that inspire my mind. Can you picture yourself with the life you want to live? What would that life look like to you? Continue to hold that picture of yourself. Napoleon Hill said, a man without a definite constructive purpose is one of nature's mistakes. You know, almost half of Americans will need some type of long-term care, and only one quarter of them will be able to afford it, you know, privately. If we don't decide that we want to be rich, we will probably end up poor because the value of a dollar shrinks every 10 years. 38% of the doctors in the U.S. are of Indian descent, and they are one of the wealthiest groups of people in the United States. Guess what they stress more than anything? Education. They stress education more than any other ethnic group that I know of, and many of them are running most of our American and global companies. You know, the cost of food is rapidly increasing. You know, yeah, your packages might be the same size, but the amount inside is shrunk. The price of gas continues to slowly creep back up to the prices of 2008. Healthcare is about to blow the roof off. I was talking to a friend a couple of days ago, and he was talking about a lady at church that actually got the healthcare subsidy. And she thought everything she had was going to be free. And she went to the pharmacist to get a prescription filled, and they told her it was going to be $245. Then she said, it's supposed to be free under my health care plan. And the pharmacist reminded her that she needed to meet the $6,000 deductible first. You know, I'm not laughing at the woman's situation. I'm laughing because people don't really want to understand what's going on in our society. They're listening to the wrong folks. You know, property taxes are increasing. And if you think because you might rent your home, you don't pay property taxes, you better think again. They're included in your rent. You know, in Houston, you know, right now, today, it costs about $10 to see a movie that might last for about an hour and 20 minutes. And a lot of times, they're not even worth seeing. I mean, I saw one movie. I've seen one movie in the last 13 years, maybe a year and a half ago. My mentor took me to see a movie. And we went during the middle of the day. We were the only two in the theater. You know, life is supposed to be fun. You know, should we hope that prices decrease, or should we figure out a way to increase our earnings? You know, we need to focus on solutions and not problems. You know, the problem is we spend so much time on our problems that the solution isn't in sight. If we have all of our eggs in one basket, what happens if we drop the basket or someone else comes along and knocks it out of our hand? You know, most of us are good at reducing our expenses, but most of us are not good at increasing our income. Oh, yeah, we can get another job. That helps. But have you changed your thought process toward money? And let's be honest. We really don't like to have to reduce our expenses. You know, I remember a while back all of those folks who bought those H2 Hummers were leaving them in the driveway because they couldn't afford to put gas in them. And I also remember hearing a guy that is a wealthy businessman, you know, saying that when he goes to the gas station, people are always asking him how much gas his vehicle uses. And his response is, it uses all of it. You know, if cutting back on gas a topic at your house, you know, it might not be right now because it hasn't creeped back up to that $4 range like it was here in Houston. You know, if we're not already rich, we have to change what we're doing because what we're doing has not gotten us to that point yet. You know, I mean, we go to school to learn how to work for money instead of how to have money work for us. You know, I remember my economics teacher in high school. And my economics teacher in high school didn't care for me and my best friend too much. But my economics teacher in high school was driving a 1977 Chevy Nova. And I graduated high school in 1989. And just to make a reference point, my mother bought a 1977 Chevy Nova in 1977 when I was in the first grade. That my drunk uncle laid a wreck taking me to school. I mean, that street light just jumped right out in front of us. You know, we also have to be careful about the people who call themselves financial advisors. Most of them are salespeople or insurance salesmen. Most of them don't even invest in the things they're telling you to put your money in. Is your current environment one that's conducive to get rich? Was your upbringing one of a financially poor one? Are you still practicing those very same habits that were passed down to you? Is your current environment one that is promoting poverty or riches? You know, your friends and associates is the environment I'm talking about. I saw a picture the other day of a Lamborghini. And in the caption it said, I have never seen a Lamborghini commercial because the people who can afford Lamborghinis are not sitting around watching TV. And if you think about it, when was the last time you saw a Ferrari commercial? Rolls Royce or Bentley commercial? What's that car, that crazy car, Pagani? Whatever it's called, I can't think of the name. When was the last time you saw a McLaren commercial? Can you name me one advantage of being poor? And somebody might say, your taxes increase when you become rich. Well, your taxes increasing anyway. You just ain't recognize it because it's done in stealth mode. Somebody might say, you know, if you become rich, people might try to rob you. If you live in a black neighborhood, have you seen the home break in those areas? And I live in a black neighborhood, so I'm laughing at myself, too. You know, if your taxes increase because you became rich, that means your income increased. When you are poor, you become a burden to everyone. You know, it might not happen immediately, but it will happen. You know, when you get older, you become a burden on family. And once you exhaust their resources, you become a burden on society. What if you put yourself in a position to be charitable than to sit around waiting on charity? You get taxed when you earn, taxed when you spend, taxed when you save, and taxed when you die. So you're not going to escape taxes. A lot of people earn a lot of money, but that's what's not important. The important thing is how much of that money do you keep? You know, I remember hearing a guy tell another guy he made $385,000 a year, and the guy he told it to asked him, how you live on that little money? I mean, he told him it shouldn't take a whole year to earn that type of money. You know, when you think you're making a lot of money, get around somebody that make it a month what it take you to make in a year, and then ask yourself, am I really doing that good? You know, we have to start to educate ourselves on what an asset is and what a liability is. Contrary to what we've been taught, our house is not an asset. Our cars aren't assets. You know, those things are always sucking money out of our pockets. You know, now don't get me wrong, I believe owning a home is a great thing, but it's not an asset. Assets produce income. Now let's face it, our financial struggles are there because we spent our entire life working for somebody else. If we're going to do that, we must be a little bit more aggressive in learning about investment vehicles to get the best return on our dollars. Just as we went to school to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic, we must now go to school to learn financial intelligence. What if you could make your dollars employees, your employees? You know, when you can put them in an asset column. Most of us don't struggle because of what we know or what we have learned. We struggle because of what we don't know and what we haven't learned. Some of us were taught to specialize. You know, there's nothing wrong with specializing and being a master at your craft. But look at the limited bubble you put yourself in. We have to focus if we're going to become rich. Focus requires our attention. Doubt are what actually keep us poor. You know, what would you do if you had all the money you needed? What would your purpose look like if you had no financial worries ever again because you learned to leverage assets? What would you do if you knew that if you spent a huge sum of money this month, it wouldn't even be a problem because it's going to automatically be replaced next month because you have built an asset to offset that? Poor people can always tell you the reasons you should play it safe. Or that something they have never tried themselves or done won't work. You can choose to listen to them, or you can find new people to listen to. I choose to listen to new people. You know, we get pushed around and bullied, not because the others are bullied, but because we are weak. If we want to get rich, we must start to dream bigger. It doesn't cost anything to dream. So why not make it grand? You know, you have to know why you want to be rich. We must become smarter with what we do with our money. You know, during a time when slavery was prevalent in this country, slaves were not allowed to be educated. Some of you know where I'm getting ready to go. Today, Americans are not educated on financial literacy. So in essence, we're not allowed to be educated on our own economic system. I mean, I remember in high school, my economics teacher gave us a whole week of study on the stock market. And when I got to college, you know, she told me as well that I needed to stop challenging the system so much. And even my econ professor in college called me to his office one day and told me I needed to stop challenging him so much. You know, are you looking for financial security or financial freedom? Have you ever heard the term maximum security? It's only one place that uses that term. So if we're not being educated in our own economic system, in essence, we have all become slaves. When a general education board, which is what we know today as the public education school system, was created, there's evidence that it was patterned after the Prussian education system, which was actually designed to create people who are great at following orders. We need to learn about true economics and finances if we are to survive and thrive. Based on that premise, is it any wonder that all we hear is go to school to get a good education so you can get a good job? Inflation helps rich people. It burdens the poor. You know, when we think about Solomon from the Bible, most of you know that Solomon has always been determined to be the richest man who ever lived. Just like the book title that you're looking at on the screen. But Solomon thought it was better to be diligent than to go with the flow. He has been said to be the wealthiest man who ever lived, as I mentioned, and he never asked for money. But he did ask for wisdom and knowledge, and the money happened to follow him. So we should seek out new awareness in our attitudes toward money, and we need to understand why it has escaped us so far. What would you like to accomplish in your personal and professional life? What do you want to accomplish in your career or business? What type of monthly or yearly income will take the pressure off? Deep down, do you really want to be rich? If the answer is yes, will you be brave enough to undo all of your old programming? Now, as I previously mentioned about Solomon, in order to attract financial wealth and riches, we need to have a goal that isn't about money. Our goals toward wealth should be about service to our fellow man and woman. What do you individually have to offer society? Now, even though your goals shouldn't be about wealth only, you should have a mindset to attract the wealth into your life. You have to believe you are deserving. We have all the thoughts of being poor for so long that we don't even know it. We can't even recognize it. We think it's business as usual, so we want others to believe we don't want to do better. Everybody wants to do better. But secretly, each one of us wants better than what we have. You know, if that wasn't the case, why do so many people play the lottery weekly? What if you could take those lottery dollars, save it, and do some education and studying on some of these investment vehicles that are available and invest that money somewhere like E-Trade or something like that? You know, the lotteries don't get to these exorbitant amounts of money by people not playing. It increases every few days because people go put more money toward it. Now, don't get me wrong. When it gets to these crazy amounts, I'll go spend a dollar. You know, I know we have all heard it's better to give than receive. How many people are actually giving to you? In order to give, you have to have something to give. In order to have it to give, you must go out and do what it takes to have it to give. Remember, as I stated earlier about the airplane, put your own oxygen mask on first. You can't give out of your abundance if you haven't created an abundance to give from. The more money you have means the more you can give. Oh, you can attain more money to buy things for yourself, but you're going to eventually come up empty. You know, how's your program with regards to getting rich or being rich? Have you ever said, I can't afford that? If you have, you have set the forces of poverty and lack into motion in your life. People are always telling others what not to do because they haven't even tried anything themselves. The people we hang with are the biggest influencers on our level of wealth. Many of you have heard that your income is about the same as the five or six people you consistently associate with. I mean, if you make $50,000, $75,000 a year, a person that makes $500 ain't hanging with you. Who are those people in your life? And what are they doing to better themselves? Will you be able to survive financially if you become disabled? We have more of a chance of becoming disabled than we do of dying in a calendar year. And it doesn't take a car accident or a natural disaster to render us disabled. It can be something as simple as an infection on your foot that keeps you from walking for a while. It can be something like a stroke or a heart attack that hits you. I'm not trying to paint a picture of doom and gloom. Just look around you. How many folks do you know this has happened to? Now, the question is, are you in a financial position to help them long term? Better yet, are you in a position to take care of you and your family long term? The last statistic I saw with regards to credit card debt was that it increased by 116%. And I saw that 25% of Americans don't have what we would call spare cash. About 70% of us live paycheck to paycheck. And about 49% of us are only able to cover 1 month's expenses if we lost our job. You know, 70% of married couples reported money troubles. And I bet it's not because they have an abundance of it. You know, there's a load of abundance for the man who will go with the tide. And the tide I'm talking about is putting the success and wealth principles in place. You know, because that might seem contrary to everything I'm saying, but it isn't. What I'm saying is we should learn how to win in this economic system of capitalism and free enterprise that we have in this country. You know, there's a load of abundance for all of us. What if we had the thought process that there was an abundance for each one of us? What if each one of us had a thought process like a seed that we plant in the ground? When you plant a seed in the ground, it's only one seed. But when it's harvest time, they're producing an abundance of fruits or vegetables. I have planted tomatoes in the past, and once the plants started to produce, I had to harvest them each day. There were so many that I was giving some away to neighbors and friends. Now, I did plant several seeds because I like to start my flowers from seeds instead of plants. And that's a tip. I planted several. I like to be in charge of the success of my plant from start to finish. I want to know what fertilizer went into cultivate that soil around that seed. Having riches is the same way. When we plant enough of the right seeds, come harvest time, we have an abundance for ourselves and also to share. I enjoy, and my wife enjoys, eating fruits and vegetables that are fresh from our garden. But guess what? I get excited about the sharing process even more. What if we had that thought process about money? The only way we can do more with this life we have been given is to have more to afford us the opportunities that are available. How many times have you said, I wish I had? You know, when we think of someone like Mother Teresa, you know, she took a holy vow of poverty, but it still took money to finance her. You know, she might have done that, but she wasn't living on the street. Resources had to take care of her. She didn't starve. You know, what if you could start picturing in your mind the things that you would like to have all the time? Years ago, George Burns was asked what having money had done for him. His response was that money had allowed him not to worry about money and to be able to focus on the important things in life. What he was saying, in my translation, was that we spend so much of our waking hours chasing after money that we miss so much of living.
Okay, there you have it. Mr. Jones, bringing it down for you. And it all involves changing your mindset, protecting your circle. Take a look at who you're associating with and think about where you are, how much money you got. And if you don't change, where you're going to be next year, if you keep doing the same thing that you're doing over and over. It's just a matter of changing your mind. And what I like to recommend you to do, go back and listen to previous broadcasts, especially the broadcast we had the brother on, Mr. Jones, and we interviewed him, and he broke it down and told us exactly how to do it. It's just a mind thing. We are where we are in this life because of the actions we have or not taken. However, we have to have the mind. So what I want to do now is I want to look at this thing from another perspective, and this will be real, real short. These are some things I want you to consider.
I have no idea why people have faith in God or anything else they can't see or touch. I'm not religious. But I've noticed that many people who subscribe to the supremacy and authority of God are starting to have a problem with the presumed supremacy and authority of government. They feel they can only serve one master. They feel that to serve two masters requires the betrayal of one master for the benefit of the other, an impossible conflict. As government presumes more and more authority and casts itself in the role of God, that conflict grows greater. Our government now tortures, kidnaps, assassinates, engages in slave trade through taxation of wages and earnings, and puts innocent citizens in bondage of debt without their consent. Our government, the one we pay for, the one we created, is doing things the Bible says good men may not do. On our dollar it says, "In God we trust." That expression was not used by our forefathers to affirm their religion. Our nation's founders did not have the slightest doubt of the existence of God. They put that expression on the money as a defiant declaration against King George III that we choose to trust God and not any king or government. It meant that we recognized that God created man with unalienable rights, and man created government under him with no rights and limited authority. For government to assume any authority above man is inverted reasoning and false presumption. There's an example of government's false presumption right on this dollar bill. We are told this is money. It says dollar. I looked in an old law dictionary, and it said that a dollar is money measured in gold or silver. If it is not gold or silver, it is not money under the law. Well, the dollar is not gold or silver, nor is it backed by gold or silver. But it must have value of some kind. The Federal Reserve prints them, loans them out, and demands them back with interest. There must be some value there. Surely the Federal Reserve is not so greedy and criminal as to charge our government interest on something that has no value. Fortunately, the Federal Reserve did explain the fundamentals of its money a few years ago in a bulletin called Modern Money Mechanics. So let's see what the creator, lender, and owner of your dollar says about its value. In the United States, neither paper currency nor deposits have any value as commodities. That means that both your cash and your bank account have no intrinsic value. They are, in fact, worthless in legal, economic, and practical terms. The only reason that Federal Reserve notes can function at all as currency is, quote, the confidence people have that they will be able to exchange them for real goods and services. They're suggesting dollars are not even real. So even the Federal Reserve, the originator of our currency, has admitted that Federal Reserve notes have absolutely no value outside of our imaginations. So much for Federal Reserve propaganda. That was the good news. The truth is much worse than that. When you accept and use Federal Reserve notes, to you they have negative value. They are damage to you. When you get a dollar, you are not getting money. You are trading your labor, goods, or services for an obligation, a debt. At the very top of the dollar, it does not say Federal Reserve money or Federal Reserve currency. It says Federal Reserve note, as in promissory note. If you're familiar with promissory notes, you will recognize the creditor's name goes at the top, the debtor just below, the signature of the debtor's representative and a witness, and the enumeration of the debt. That is not a dollar. It is an IOU for a dollar, an instrument of debt and obligation of the United States government, and by taking possession of it, you become a debtor. Your government borrowed that dollar at interest and promised that you would pay the interest through all kinds of taxes, fees, fines, licenses, permits, judgments, and demands. As the Federal Reserve said, the dollar is not a commodity. It is a contract of debt attaching itself to anyone who touches it. That contract says those notes may be taken from you at the whim of government. Anything you buy with it may be confiscated by government. It's fool's money. The Federal Reserve note is the shackle and gun of the slave system known as fiat currency. The Federal Reserve banks have trapped our government into constantly begging for more and more loans and to push worthless debt notes on every American in a snowballing crisis of public debt and toxic currency. This note is the single most destructive force against our economy, wealth, and our freedoms and our opportunities, not to mention the integrity of our government's finances. It is truly a system of bondage and economic suffocation. Most Americans are fully brainwashed to think this is money. The hour is late, and the problem is massive. Any solution now will have to be as large as the problem. So it is time for all of us who care about our future to start imagining a world where we no longer use debt and we no longer use unbacked currencies. And most important of all, that we never again allow our government to borrow. I'm Jerry Day. This is Matrix News Network.
Well, I think that was quick, short, sharp, and to the point. There you have it. So, let's take a look at a little common sense that we can use. If we know there is no money, and all of these people are constantly burdening us with this debt, they say, well, you owe us for a student loan, you owe us on a mortgage, and you owe us taxes, and that's something I want to look at for a minute before I get into this other thing here. Let's take a quick look at this right here.
In the USA, we have a government by the people. That means we can decide how much tax we should pay. Let's do that right now. What percent of your earnings should be taken to pay for government services? Here's how you figure that out. After you pay for your housing, utilities, food, clothing, transportation, recreation, health care and medical, education, child rearing, and retirement savings, how much should you hold out to pay for the services your government provides? So right now, pick a number, 5%, 20%, 50%, it's up to you. Just select a percent of earnings that you think is fair to you and all taxpayers to keep government running to our satisfaction. Just keep a note in your head of one simple percentage number for your tax obligation goal. Got it? Good. Now I'm going to calculate the amount you actually pay to see if you need to make any adjustments to your government to meet your personal goal. We have to pay federal taxes, but of course we also have to pay city, county, and state taxes. And we're not just obligated to pay what government collects. Sooner or later, we must pay everything government spends. If they borrow, that just means we have to pay it later with interest. So the important number is not the budget or the revenues. Our taxes are based on government spending. Now, I'm going to play with a lot of big numbers, but you don't have to understand or calculate these numbers at all. By the time I'm done, you'll understand your taxes perhaps a little better than you do now. As an example, I'm using a Los Angeles taxpayer, but this is roughly the same for every taxpayer nationwide. In each jurisdiction, like federal, state, or local, I've divided the number of taxpayers by the amount of government spending. So it's very simple. If it was $100 of spending spread among two taxpayers, it would be $50 of taxes and obligations per year.
Well, the numbers that government itself provides us tell us that government expenditures per taxpayer for 2013 are right around $27,000. You are on the hook for $27,000 for that year. Government publishes figures on income for per household, and there are about two taxpayers per household, so the income per taxpayer comes to about $22,000. Okay, so do you remember the percent of your income that you selected as your fair tax rate? Here's the actual percent you owe in taxes for 2013. 122% of your earnings must be paid that year to avoid skyrocketing deficits. How did we come up with what seems like an impossible number? We did it with that magical thing called borrowing. Your government borrowed freshly printed, worthless, unbacked paper currency from the privately owned Federal Reserve banking cartel. Your government named you as the debtor without your informed or voluntary consent. Then they took that money and they bought some drones and they shot missiles into Afghanistan's villages and they murdered families while they gathered for their weddings and funerals so that we could install a puppet government so global corporations could plunder all the oil, minerals, and resources from that country. All of that has been reported even by the mainstream corporate-controlled media, so don't tell me I'm making any of that up. So 122% of your income is your actual tax rate if you pay it all this year. It's more if you don't. It's interesting, isn't it? Any portion of the 122% of your income that you don't pay in 2013 taxes, you will have to pay later with interest. If you selfishly keep even 1 cent of your own earnings, you are essentially putting it on a credit card. Oh, now for the bad news. Since your government has been borrowing for a long time, there's a back bill due of $80,000 per taxpayer. It would be wise to send your $80,000 to the Treasury right away. You see, interest and borrowing goes up every year, and this could get away from us. If each taxpayer does not send a gift to the Treasury of $80,000 in 2013, in 2014, you will owe $88,000. In 2015, it will be $100,000, and so on. Our tax obligations are far beyond our gross income, and they are now lurching onto a vertical curve. Ladies and gentlemen, we are cooked. So on your credit card, without your consent, government is lavishly paying for enforcing a global corporatocracy with the United States military as the enforcer, while paying back the retiring baby boomers for what they paid into Social Security, while paying for an exploding demand for welfare, food stamps, family subsidies, housing subsidies, transportation subsidies, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, Medicare, disability, and Obamacare, and fighting a war on terrorism, a war on drugs, a war on poverty, a war on privacy, a war on dissent, a war on the United States Constitution. And, of course, we have to pay for a few multi-trillion dollar bank bailouts. So government is now very, very expensive. And paying for that costs 122% of your income and rising. No one has a right to borrow money and then arbitrarily name you as the debtor without your expressed consent. To be a true debtor, you have to have voluntarily signed a promissory note under full disclosure, and you must personally receive the loan funds. You have not done that. The people who are authorizing the borrowing are not the people who must pay back. There is a moral hazard here, where we have limited wealth, and they are giving us unlimited debt. In various countries, this fiscal insanity has now led to severe austerity, drastic cutbacks of government programs and services, sky-high taxes, massive unemployment, skyrocketing suicides, riots, currency devaluations, runs on the banks, destruction of national sovereignties, and surrender of collateralized natural resources to the International Monetary Fund. One country that didn't suffer from all that is Iceland. Oh, sure, their government borrowed and spent just like everybody else's, but instead of pledging to pay back a bunch of crooked bankers for a bunch of phony money loans on behalf of a corrupt government, and volunteering into debt slavery from here to eternity, they did what everyone should be doing. The people of Iceland put the bankers in prison. They let the banks fail. They threw all their corrupt politicians out of office, elected a new government, reformed their currency, and went on about their business in an era of renewed prosperity. The only way Iceland was able to do that is that the people spoke up and demanded those changes. The people of Iceland were angry, were loud, were resolute, and they were unified in that purpose. If we do not do the same, if the perpetrators of this mess are not held to account, it will be you and I paying the price, the full price, with interest. My friends, it is time to make some noise. If you can't think of a course of action, join some group that can help you with that. I'm not prepared to say that the people of Iceland could do something and the people of the United States of America could not.
Where we are in this life because of the actions we have or have not taken. You don't wait until war break out to start making ammunition. You make your ammunition in peacetime. Look up the word mortgage in Black's Law Dictionary. You will find the word lien. Now ask yourself a question. Do you need a lien? How can you say I'm being blessed, I just got a lien? Come on, man. Let's use a little common sense here, and let's start freeing up some capital for investment. Let's examine these things. Let's get all the information on it. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amana Elbe, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's go to work on this thing. Let's make the ammunition now.
Okay, Moses, we back. I hope we all got some out of this stuff. Now, let's look at it this way. I want to start a business, but I don't have seed capital. But I have a bank note, I have a mortgage, I have a car note, I have student loan debt. I have child support, I got the IRS debt, and I got all these debt. Well, let's take a pencil and paper, and let's put right down how much that we are paying for these debts. And then let's turn around and discover, find out what kind of business we're on. Okay, so we got... we'll say $4,000 going out to debt on all these contracts, all these people. At the same time, there is no money. The people that give you the student loan, they tell you, okay, we are going to give you the student loan. So you fill out this paperwork, okay? So you fill out the paperwork. You put in all the information. You want your name. We want your address. We want your phone number. We want your email address. Okay, now we need your Social Security number. And to top it all off, no matter what, we're gonna need your credit. We're gonna get you to get all the way contract, and then the bottom line is we're going to need your signature. You're going to need to sign for this. You're in agreement with everything that we say in this contract. because we told you we're going to give you a loan. Okay, so you fill that out, you put in Social Security number, you sign it, and then you send it back to the people that said they were going to give you the loan so you can go to school, get an education, and get that degree, and then come out and try to see if somebody thinking about hiring to get a job. But then after you finish all the classes and paperwork and let us know that you done finished and on the loan we said we gave you. Now, we didn't give you no money. After you turn the paperwork back in, we told you congratulations. We your classes start on this date. You can pick your books up from such a place and see such a person over there at school. Congratulations. Your classes have been paid for. You ain't seen now dime. You ain't oh man, this is amazing. This is the Brother Malcolm X say we have been shafted. We've been hoodwinked. We've been bamboozled. And it's still going on every day. You know, I have kids come by, walk by my house going to school, and they tell me, sometimes I ask them, I say, well, what are you going to do after you graduate? Well, I'm going to college. My mama says she's going to put me in college. I say, so, y'all, ooh, man, that's college is expensive. Well, I'll get a scholarship. Okay. Okay, so you gonna get a scholarship, go to college. You gonna what about a loan? You gonna get it? I don't know, yeah, we can get a loan. They got all kind of loans we could get to go to school. But I think about that and I say, wow, how do I reach more of my people to explain this stuff to, so you can stop spending the time that the Creator has gave you on this planet scuffling and drudgingly going through this stuff over and over and over, when all you had to do is just do a little bit of thinking. Ask a few questions. Do a little research. I mean, we got the internet. The internet is very, very powerful. You can just type stuff in and stuff come up, whole lot of stuff. You know, let's find out whether or not the United States got any money. Let's pull a dollar bill out your pocket and look on and see if you see the word money on it anywhere. And if none of that's the case, you should call the people that claim they gave you a loan and tell them to send you a copy of the check, because they forgot to address it to you. If they said it doesn't go that way, well, send a copy of the check or the draft or anything that you send anywhere on my behalf so I can sign it. So tell you what to sign. And let's find out whether or not anybody got anything or what's going on with this thing. They told you, we're going to have the signing for your house, and we will come over to the house that you're going to get so you can sign the paperwork so you can get your house. So they came in and had about five or six people and from three to five people sitting around the table, and they got all these big stack of papers in their hand, and they give you the papers and just point, sign here, sir, sign here. Nobody in the group say, we need you to fully read this. Get you an attorney to look at this before you sign anything. Nobody did that. And after you went through, you know, got a cramp in your fingers, you know, signed so many documents, you signed your name so many times, your Social Security number went so many places, and all of this stuff, and you signed, then they said, well, give you the loan. And then they give you a stack of papers to take to the bank. And the bank examiner say, I've been expecting you so we can finish taking you for the rest of the ride.
So you sit down and you give them, I was told to give you this. You give that, say, well, thank you very much. I'll be right back. And they go in the bag and they come back with some more papers for you to sign. We need you to put your Social Security number here. We need you to sign here. For Social Security number there, I need you to sign here. And then congratulations. Where's the house at? Oh, my God. No doubt, that's probably a beautiful home. I wish I lived over there. But congratulations on your new home. So you walk out the bank happily. You got these little papers with you. But they forgot to give you the check. The people at the table told you that the bank was going to give you the loan, but you walked out of there. You didn't get the check. You got to call the bank back and say, y'all forgot to give me the check so I can sign it. And then this is amazing how this stuff is working. But what I suggest that you do is learn what's going on so you can start taking it, change your circumstances. And if you don't know anything, you can't do anything. You just in the same old stuff. You shafted on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have not understood that life is passing us by so fast because we're ripping and running to the job. We're about to run over somebody to get to work. We're running late. Because we got to hurry up and get there and make them rich. And then we come back home, we tired, our joints aching, we frustrated because of the people on the job that we're interacting with that we don't know any, because we don't have any astrological information to know who we're dealing with, who to avoid or who not to. So we're suffering from that. And then when we get out, we're in traffic, it's on Friday, we're trying to get to the bank, but the bridge up. Oh, there's an accident up front, and traffic backed up. It's hot. I'm running out of gas. I got to roll out the windows to conserve gas, and I don't smell nothing but gasoline fumes. And we go through this here every year. And the only thing that we got to do is to change your mind. Change your mind and start looking at this thing from a whole different perspective. Look at getting out from under the burden of debt. Okay, when you get out from under the burden of debt, now if you got $2,000 going to the mortgage, okay, we put $2,000 down on that sheet of paper I told you about. Okay, we got an additional $400 going out for the car note. We put that down. That's $2,400. Now we got the student loan down. We got it down to $300. It was $500, but we got it down to $300. So that's $2,400 additional $300. That's $1,700. Okay, so good so far. Now let's look at anything else that we got going on. What else we got going on? Where else the money going? We got to look at that. And we can get this stuff down and relieve ourselves of the burden of these debts. Now we have some seed capital to invest in what's called business, which represents our freedom. We want to get something that we enjoy doing so we can stop wasting our time making a living and get on with the business of actually living. It's called getting up in the morning and deciding, well, I don't think I want to be up right now. I'll go back and lay back down. Or I decided that I'm going to go outside, get in my vehicle, and go to the bookstore, buy me some books. Or I decided, well, the day is Monday, and I got to watch out for all these people who are running late for work. They may run over me, so I'll wait till they go by, and then I'll go over here to this other place, and I think I'll spend the evening at the museum. Because what I'm doing is I'm actually using my brain to change my circumstances. And I'm doing more thinking than I'm doing physical labor. And we're on a job, and we're in the labor position, and we're a machine operator, and we're a truck driver. We're doing all this physical stuff.
But then we got the supervisor, we got the manager, we got the general manager, and all they do is walk around and look to see if you are still working like a Hebrew slave. And we go home and we sit down and we faintly think about changing our circumstances. And then we say, well, when the weekend get here, I'm going to start doing something different. But when the weekend comes, we have forgotten about what we thought about changing because the weekend is here. I'm going to relax. I'm going to watch the game. I'm going to lay back on the, I'm going to stay in the bed all day long. I'm not going to get up. And the next thing you know, guess what? Start smelling Monday. Oh, my goodness. I haven't done anything. I got to go back through this again for 5 or 6 more days. And at the end of the 6 days, they're going to give me some more what? Debt notes. And on the way to the bank, I'm going to have a check sitting on my car seat beside me, and I'm going to be looking over there at it. And when I get to the bank, the teller going to be smiling. Good evening. How are you? Are you making a deposit? Have you signed it? Go ahead and sign it. And now give me that piece of paper, and I'll give you some more paper. So you can go out of, ooh, this is wonderful. Ooh, thank God nobody's changing their mind. Keeps me employed. You give me a check, and I'll give you some more paper money, but I need you to think that this is actually money. Okay? And I'll see you next week. And don't forget, if you have any kind of problems, don't hesitate. Call the bank, and we'll be right here. That doesn't mean that we're going to do anything to help you, but we'll be here until the next time you roll in here with some more a check that you done signed and gave to us after you slaving. And you look around that while you're in the bank, and you see the people standing in there. They got on work clothes. They got on shoes. They've been scuffling, brothers, and sweating. They got a hard hat on his arm. All this is every day. We see this every time we go to the bank. There's a little old lady. She's going up to the bank. She's trying to cash her check, her government check, and all this stuff. We need to start thinking is all I'm saying to you. And let's change this picture. Let's stop the routine of madness. We got to stop letting somebody else determine how much life we are going to live. We got to stop letting somebody else determine what kind of food we can eat based on whether we can afford it or not. We got to stop letting somebody else determine what kind of clothes our children are going to wear, where we're going to go for vacation, and how long we're going to stay. And that's very interesting, especially when you are you done got a week's vacation. You done worked all year, and somebody decided that, well, you go on vacation next week. Yeah, I'm going next week. Isn't it? Well, where you going to go? Well, me and the family, we going down to South Florida. Ooh, man, I bet you it's beautiful down there. Well, I tell you what, bring me a souvenir back when you get down there. And you get on the highway in your Chevrolet, and you riding down the highway, but all of a sudden here comes this big Winnebago that blows by you. $200,000 Greyhound bus converted into a motorhome. It's on a Monday when you went on vacation. It's 2:00 in the afternoon. And you thinking, well, I know doggone well, these folks ain't working on no job nowhere. No. They're the ones that's changed their mind and investing. They're a member of a family called the Half-Mores. They're not a member of the family that's called the Wishmores. There's two types of families, the Half-Mores and the Wishmores. Now, the Wishmores, they get off from work and they go on vacation. They ride down the highway, and this big Winnebago pass by them. The little kids in the window waving, hey, how y'all poor folks doing? Hey,
we're going down to South Florida. We'll be there a month, and then after we leave there, then we're going to park in Winnebago and catch a plane to England. And when we get through with that, then we're going over to the Virgin Islands. And when we get through with that, we're going to Cancun, Mexico. And the next thing you know, the year has ended. So we have to work real, real hard to come up with another plan for where we're going to go next year. We're going to go to Nova Scotia. We're going to go to Honolulu. We're going to go to the Cayman Islands. We're going to go here. Where are you going, Mr. Wishmore? We're going back to work. Back to the slave quarters again. Back to all the noise and rackets and ulcers and sandwiches and the little machine they have in the cafeteria for you to put your nickels and dimes in to get a soda and a pack of peanuts. And get your lunch break, coffee break, and lunch break. And we do this for day in and day out, week after week after week, year after year after year. And then when it comes time for us to retire, we got this thing in our mind that we're actually going to get something. And they say, well, I retire when I get 60 or 65 now. And you get your retirement and you look at it and you say, well, dog, I was making, this is not enough because this is just a fraction of what I was getting because I was making like, what, $600 a week? And now I'm getting $600 a month? Oh, my goodness. I got to go get another job. I got to go pick up cans. I got to do something. And I'll keep doing this until I die because this is not designed for the Wishmores to ever become Havemores. The only way a Wishmore can become a Havemore is a Wishmore has to start thinking like a Havemore. Now, what is unique and what's to our advantage inside the United States of America is because we have what's called a free enterprise system. We don't have an out-of-gration quota inside this country. Anybody is free to leave. But instead of just running off and leaving, why don't we just change our thinking and change what we do on a daily basis? Let's get a pencil and paper and put some plans down. And let's take one step at a time. Let's take one little small step at a time. And then you, when you start doing this and you get in a position to open up your little business, now going to work doesn't seem so bad because I have a plan to change my life. And now I've discovered that as a Wishmore, I'm going to work on your job for a whole different reason. I'm here now to get seed capital for investment in my own company. So, therefore, if you have any overtime, could you let me know when I can work it? Because I'm doing it for a different reason. Nah, I'm not doing it to put no rims on the car. I'm not doing it to take my girl to the new hair salon to get her this new these new toenails and fingernails and a new pack of weave that costs $200. We ain't doing that. No more. We're gonna change our thinking, change our appearance, change everything, change our association. We're gonna even change the direction that we go to work and come back home because we got a plan. We got a piece of paper. We're writing it down. We're putting the debt to the side. We're getting ready to make our move. We got a target date. We're trying to discover how much overtime we can get up in there so we can get that little extra money and move us closer to our goal of making a transformation from the Wishmores until getting into the position of the Havemores. You can do it. Change your mind. Everything comes from a preceding thought impulse. Walk in the grocery store and look at all the different products on the shelf. These are products that are owned by somebody. People are making money every time you spend a dollar on some of that. These people are making debt notes that we've recognized in the money, and these people are not in there working. But they own the products, and they're getting proceeds from the product. And I know they're doing that because we're going in the stores, and we're actually giving them the paper and walking out with the product. These people that own the product that's sitting on the shelf that you buying are living. Now, if you don't believe that, go over there to the section where the what it is a barbecue sauce. You'll see Paul Newman, barbecue sauce. Paul Newman, the actor. He got some barbecue sauce in there for you to buy. Wish more and have more. So the question is, which one do you want to be? Do you want to be a member of the have more family, or do you want to be remain a member of the wish mores? It's totally up to you. It's all in your head. Right there in your head. All you got to do is change your mind. Now, anybody disagreeing with me now, you go ahead and raise your hand, open up the line, you can let me know what you think about it. But that's the way I see it. And the reason I know that, because I already been in there. I worked most of my life. The first job when I was 14 years old, working in a restaurant. Man, look, I was so proud to be there, so glad to be there. They told me they were going to pay me $13 a week, but all my lunch is going to be free, and they were selling hamburgers and french fries. They had some big old hamburgers. Oh, man, I was working there. I was washing them dishes, man, and all that good stuff, trying to get them $13 a week. Hello, 972. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brother Tahaka.
Hey, Sister Sharon Hunter Bay. What's going on?
Nothing much. Just listening to you. You're talking about changing your mindset. And one thing I have to agree with you on, I think it is a point where you just really get sick and tired of just doing what it is and that you're doing, and you realize that you are just spending most of your majority of your life just behind in a slave camp. I recently had a job in a call center, and when I went there, and it was a part-time job, but when I went there at like 5, it'll go to work at 4 and get off at 9. Some people might say that's only 5 hours. But that whole entire 5 hours, you're on the phone, back-to-back-to-back-to-back to call. And I didn't feel like the people at that place respected the workers or nothing like that. They just walk around cracking the whoop. Take them payments. Hurry up and get off that call to get on the next call. That's all they was trying to do. They weren't really concerned about you helping the customer or anything. All they wanted you to do was collect money and move up to the next one. They don't want you to spend no time trying to resolve a customer's issue and things of that nature. Customer service not necessary. But I have worked in many jobs like that. And just recently, after the last one, when I left this last job, I decided I wasn't looking for any more of them. They even offered me a position to advance in the company. And did I want to work more hours? They'll move me up to full-time hours. And I told them, I didn't even like the part-time hours. So why would I want to move up full-time hours of the same stuff? You're going to torture me for 8.5 hours instead of the 5 hours. So, no. Well, I turned that down, and I just realized I'm just sick and tired of that. I'm not looking for any other kind of position like that. And I finally just decided, me and my sister, we got together, and we put our heads together because she quit her job, too. She was tired of it, too, sick and tired. So she quit her job, and I let that one go, and now we both put our minds together, and we were able to open up our own business.
Well, there you go. Change your mind.
So that's all you got to do.
That's
what we're focusing on now.
I hear you. Well, sister, I'm certainly glad you came in and gave us that testimony, because that's all you got to do. When you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, then you can get on with the business of living. You can stop being a member of the Wishmore family, and you can start getting in position to become a member of the Havemores.
I thank you so much for that, sister.
All right, bro.
All right. Well, everybody, we're moving down to the close of the broadcast, and I hope y'all got something out of that. Please go over to newdebtelimination.com. It's on your own business right up top. Just click on it. Hey, if you got any questions about anything, just give me a call, and I'll explain it to you, show you the benefits of it. And if you want to use that to generate the capital to invest in your own business or whatever it's going to take, the key is to change your mind and start focusing on becoming self-employed so that you can get you can actually start living instead of spending all your time making a living and calling yourself a man. Come on, oh woman. We got to get away from that type of thinking. Anyway, it's time for me to go. I've been y'all host, Uncle Monty L. Bean. Until next time.
Girl, I can't do this curfew thing. Can't no man tell me when to come and go. Cause I'm a single woman, and I can't get down with that. But neither should you. Come on, girl, grab your purse, grab your shoes. Cause we're gonna have fun tonight.
Looking for a woman in here tonight. That don't have no one, and she can stay out all night. Woman that's strong, someone that's sweet, a woman that controls her own destiny. She don't have to watch your watch, she don't have to watch no clock, got no curfew. She's already paid her bills, dancing in free and chill, got no curfew. All the women in here that call your shots, and you the only one with a key to your lock. You come and go just as you please. You in here tonight and no rush to leave. Nobody's texting you or calling your
call.
You don't have to watch no clock, got no curfew.